Good morning. We'll call the meeting of the Ag Policy Committee to order. Good morning and welcome, everybody. We have three bills on the agenda. Shouldn't take the entire committee time if we can move judiciously. See, we have a quorum, and with that, would Representative Daniels care to move the minutes from the January 11th meeting?
Yes, I so move, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Daniels. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passed. Thank you. Representative Miller has an announcement to make.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to wait until the end, but I'll do it now. Members and anyone that else is interested in agriculture, we have a day on the hill coming up in February, Southern Minnesota Sugar Beet Cooperative, which is in my district, Wednesday, February 22nd, and there will be signs up for this. This is just your early invitation. Wednesday, February 22nd, from 9 to 11:30 a.m., 400 North in the SOB. You'll be seeing signs like this around, but sugar beets are very important in my area, as well as in North and some of the other places, so please come by and you'll hear what's important to them, and they're going to have refreshments there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thanks, Representative. First bill up for the morning will be Representative Quam. I believe he's here. Oh, he's ready to go. So, Representative Poston, would you move House File 22 be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that.
Very good. Thank you much. And Representative Quam, go ahead. Let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Basically, there's a situation that affects not a large number of people, but over the years, farmers have had to sell off property, and sometimes the farm homestead is not connected to the tillable and the rest of the farm, and so that they lose a little bit of standing there. And it's not uncommon now with demographics of where farmers are getting in their 60s and they're transitioning the farm, and for a period of time they're renting out the tillable. And if they're renting out the tillable and they're not living adjacent to the farm, then they run into at times difficulties qualifying for the homestead treatment. So property taxes, they've seen bump up. And the intent is, if the person on the property tax roll or their family or their spouse or their family have farmed for 10 years, they don't have to jump through hoops. And if you've seen the flow chart and logic diagram, it's rather convoluted, so they don't accidentally fall off and have their property taxes bump up. I had one gentleman, he said, I don't want to be the one that sells off the farm to pay the taxes. And I think that this bill, while it doesn't hit a lot of people, it hits the fairness of people that have, and families that have run the farm, are still considered farmers. And the bill is actually probably shorter than what I spoke.
Representative Quam, I made a mistake here. We have to amend the motion, Representative Poston. This bill needs to go to the Property Tax Division. My apologies for that. So, Representative Poston, could you amend your motion to send House File 40 to the Property Tax Division?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I would move that this bill goes to the Property Tax Committee.
Thank you very much. And again, all in favor of that change to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Motion passed. Thank you. Representative Quam, we've had this bill here before. I think it's a good bill. Any further comments or questions by members of the committee? None? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, is there any impact that you know of that'll be? I mean, it's a small scale, but I'm expecting, from what the bill reads, very, very small impact on property taxes statewide. Is that kind of what you were thinking as well?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Daniels. I anticipate it being very small. I'm hearing from the counties around me, one or two a year. There's another example of where the son lived on the farm, and he got killed in a car accident. And through the process of having another member who was going to live there, et cetera, the taxes bumped up. That's not quite what this is, but it's very small numbers, but it hits families, and to a farm family that's been running that farm maybe for generations, it means a lot if they're forced to sell off because the taxes are high. If it hits in a bad year for crops and rental rates are down, there just isn't the cash flow. And, it's more a principal thing as opposed to a dollar and cent thing. I don't think it would show up in a state budget. It'd be many decimal places down.
Gotcha. Thank you very much, Representative Quam. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Quam, it's interesting you bring a bill up today. I had a conversation over the weekend with a retired farmer back home where I live, and he has retired from farming and moved to town. And if I recall correctly, he had three parcels, about 50 acres that were in CRP, which he was getting $88 an acre, and he had a 40 and about 60 acres in another parcel. And he seemed very reasonable. He was renting the land out for about $60, $65 an acre to another farmer who hopefully could make a little money on it. So this guy, who now has lost his ag homestead because he moved to town, he owns 140 acres, and he said that when he finished paying all of his taxes, he was left with $15. So it is pretty much a break even. In his case, he didn't lose money, but not much there. So I think there's a need for a bill such as yours for situations like that. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify either for or against this bill? Come on down, sir. I think we saw you in the property tax division just a little bit ago. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Stephen Baker. I'm the Ramsey County Assessor. We're the least ag county in the state of Minnesota, but I'm here this morning testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. I understand the concerns around taxes for farmers in Minnesota, and I think assessors support equitable taxes. We have had for a number of years concern about the special ag homestead provision in Minnesota law, which kind of morphed from a temporary program to serve some flood-ravaged properties up, I think, by the Red River Valley. It's one of the more complicated programs, if not the most, that we administer in Minnesota. And so for that reason, we stand ready, I think, to work with, revenue. The assessors stand ready to work with revenue and this committee, others, to see if there's an alternative way to provide relief rather than through this type of mechanism. It's just very onerous to administer. We're in a situation where we're doing land ties and property links between counties, between parcels, maintaining multiple parcel records for properties. I think one assessor told me they were up to 32 records on some of their ag properties. It's just really tough. And that leads to mistakes as well. So if there's a way that if tax simplification gets any traction in Minnesota ever, this is a program that's going to be, it was recommended by the Property Tax Working Group 4 years ago, I think, to be eliminated. So I think if we could start thinking about alternative ways to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish here, we would be best served.
So, sir, do you have any ideas, any suggestions?
what we've really talked about the most probably as assessors is there a different class rate that, you know, is between the homestead class rate and the non-homestead class rate that would work. And then maybe homestead goes to just the house, garage, and 1 acre, and all ag land goes at the same rate, and that rate is something that is workable. As I understand it, one of the concerns in the past is where that rate would need to be causes too much of a loss in tax base in some of the agricultural counties and communities. So I don't profess to know, you know, where that sweet spot is that would actually work. But we got a lot of smart people in Minnesota and people that are well-intentioned. I think there's a chance that we could come up with something that might be simpler to administer and still provide the relief that our farmers and property owners need and deserve.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Baker, correct?
Mr. Baker, yeah, yep. Stephen Baker.
Yep. Yeah, I think good points you make. On the property tax division, I think every new member on that committee comes in with the idea of working on property tax simplification. We have like 56 different classifications, and I've looked into it, tried to come up with some ideas, and it's really difficult. These classifications are all there for a reason, and when you start picking and choosing and changing, you're going to make somebody happy and somebody not so happy. So, The whole homestead thing is complicated. The assessors have to do income verification in some areas to make sure you have a Schedule F and have a farm income. So, yeah, very difficult, but a difficult nut to crack. So thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else would care to comment on Representative Quam's bill? Representative Quam, do you have any closing comments?
Just one, you know, bringing up that the whole thing was to have people that actually ran the farm or they were there, and that's why I borrowed the same language that's been around probably for many decades. On 3.12, the owner lives no farther than four townships or cities or a combination of four townships or cities from the agricultural property except if the owner or the owner's spouse is required to live. You know, they're basically saying you're in proximity, and that rule works if you have the risk of being a farmer. So my advice to the people who have come to me is when you do rental agreements, have a portion of the rental agreement dependent on yield. So you have some of the risk of being a farmer, and that's some of the jump, you know, hoops you jump through to qualify. So this still is somebody that's right there. It's not like they moved to New York City and are still trying to get a homestead credit. But again, I'm open to all suggestions on how to improve it. I just, it tears at your heart, these individual situations that we hear about.
Thanks, Representative. If there are no more questions, Representative Poston renews his motion that House File 40 be re-referred to the Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, say nay. Motion approved. Thank you. Next bill up is, I see Representative Smith has come in. And if he's ready, come on down. And Representative Nielsen, would you move House File 22? Pearson. I called him Lars here.
Lars will do it too. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 22 be re-referred to the Register.
Thank you.
General Register.
Thank you very much. Representative Smith, good morning. Welcome to the Ag Policy Committee. And please present your bill, House File 22.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you. This bill eliminates an unnecessary annual reporting requirement for agricultural land held in revocable trusts. Many farmers are unaware of this requirement, and their failure to comply with this result, or their failure to reside, I'm sorry, their failure to comply with this can result in criminal penalties. That is the, it's a gross misdemeanor, and it's something that's happening throughout the state, and it's really unnecessary. It's an undue hardship on small family farms. Mr. Chair, I have Jennifer Lammers with me today to provide some technical background if there's any questions related to that.
Good morning, Ms. Lammers. Would you care to say a few words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a...
Identify yourself for the record, please, and then go ahead.
Identify myself?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jennifer Lammers. I'm a partner at Briggs & Morgan, which is a law firm. I represent many farmers for their estate planning, administration, and business planning. And as part of that, many farmers are putting their farm property in revocable trusts simply as a probate avoidance mechanism. And in order to do that, the corporate farm statute requires that the trustees of the revocable trust file their corporate farm reports every year. And it's very burdensome. It can be expensive because some of them wish to have attorneys do them, and it's unnecessary. The purpose of the reporting requirement under the Corporate Farm Act is to prevent entities from owning agricultural land and contaminating the land and then leaving the land with the state having to clean up the land. Revocable trusts don't have limited liability status. If a person who is owns property in a revocable trust contaminates the land, they are personally liable to clean up the land. So for some unmistaken reason, the trusts were lumped in with the other limited liability entities for reporting requirements, and it's not necessary. So we're asking that there be an exemption for revocable trusts having to report to take away the burden on behalf of the farmers because it doesn't pursue the reason for the statute.
Thank you very much. Questions from members? Vice Chair Backer.
Chair and Representative Smith. What was the intent? Why was this report required initially? What, do we have a mindset why that was initially put back in law many, many years ago?
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't know for certain. It's believed that it was just an oversight.
Follow-up, Representative Bash?
Generally, what type of timeline does it take to do this form, to fill it out correctly and get it submitted? Are we talking about an hour, 2 hour? I'm assuming you help the farmers do that, ma'am, or can you walk through that process a little bit?
Ms. Lammers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. yes, it can take anywhere from a couple hours to many hours because the report requires things like a conservation report, explain what kind of revenue you generated on the land, what are you producing. So for somebody like myself who does reports and I'm sophisticated and I have to charge the client for doing the report, it could take me an hour to 2 hours. For somebody who isn't sophisticated in doing such report, it could take them many hours to do the report, and it can be very overwhelming and not necessary. And it's not necessary to do the report because, again, there's no limited liability protection for the revocable trust. And they also do have criminal penalties if they don't file the report, many of which they're not even aware of. So it can be very difficult.
Yeah. Follow-up, Representative Backer?
Yeah, Chair Anderson. Where do you submit the report? Who gets the report?
Ms. Lammers.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You submit the report to the Department of Agriculture.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions, Chair.
That leads to a question I have. I think it was last year the Department of Ag instituted a new $15 fee for applying for this. Would this take care of that, or will this affect the fee the Department of Ag charges? Ms. Lammers?
Mr. Chair, I understand that if you submit the report, you do have to pay $15. So if the revocable trusts are exempt, is what we're asking them to be, then they would not be paying that fee, yes. It will be another benefit to the farmer.
So if this particular class is exempted, who is left then that would have to file every year and pay that fee? Do you know?
Yes, that? Mr. Chair. Where this is actually mostly administrated under is people who are owning agricultural land in corporations, a family farm corporation, a family farm partnership, an LLC. Yes. And so it's going to be in other limited liability entities.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Representative Lewitt.
Just a general question. As I understand, this would actually likely reduce the amount of legal assistance and costs that a person would need to use right now, because it, from what I understand, you, for the average person, this is probably something you'd have to get outside help to file these this report. So I just more of a comment, not a not a question. I like to see our legal folks prosper, but I certainly would like to see this move right on and get approved, because if it's not necessary, then we shouldn't be using those resources in that area. So I appreciate Ms. Representative Smith for you bringing this to us, because if it helps a little guy, that's a great thing.
I don't think there was a question here, just a comment. Right? Okay, thank you, Representative. Next question, Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question revolves primarily around unintended consequences. So what in your proposed structure and the wording that you would be bringing forward keeps, because anytime you create a great benefit in the mind of some recipient of that benefit, it's going to drive people toward it. And they oftentimes will construct themselves to be able to get the benefit that might otherwise not be figured that they would put themselves into that structure. So is it the definition of a, I'll let you tell me.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Lammers, a representative?
Mr. Chair,
I think there was a question there, so comment on that. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Representative
I'll
Smith.
I'll take a stab at cracking the answering your question. So there really isn't any unintended consequences with this bill. When a small family farmer comes to an attorney or wants to devise a structure, a corporate entity structure, or a way to avoid probate themselves, if they're receiving counsel, the counsel they'll receive is that a revocable trust allows their farm to stay out of probate upon the second spouse passing if it's held in joint tenancy. Right. If they're looking for some corporate liability, which is a different discussion with the client from a business aspect, then they're going to be steered towards some sort of LLC or limited liability company. So in this case, this is purely just a pro-benefit of small family farmer, and there's no unintended consequence.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, just I want to confirm then what I thought I heard is what you intended to have me hear. The structure itself does not draw anybody else to it as a legal structure, because it's defined only or generally seen as a structure that only deals with the question of probate management as opposed to any other legal structural protections and or benefits.
Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes is the answer to your question. I mean, it's a little bit nuanced. Revocable trust can be used in a variety of ways, especially in your end of life for people that are elderly, for private estates or for, you know, individual estates. But in regard to the context of what this committee is looking at and what this bill deals with in regard to family farms, it is simply just to avoid probate, yes.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, how many families would be affected by this? Should this become law?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Lammers, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. A majority of families that are owning ag property are putting their property in revocable trusts. Many, many families are going to be benefited by doing this. I can't give you a specific number, but we're really seeing the trend of families not doing wills anymore, and they're really putting their property into revocable trusts as a way to avoid probate, just to save costs and administration. So I would say many, many more than we can probably even estimate.
Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that leads me to your comment about this could have a fiscal impact. On the revenue stream for the Department of Agriculture, and does it need a fiscal note? Does it need to go to another committee before going to floor? Those sorts of questions come forward.
The fee charged by the Department of Ag was $15, not a large fee, so I would suspect that would maybe cover their time involved in filing something like that. So if it doesn't come in, they wouldn't have the expense of having to file it. I would think it'd be a wash. Comment from either
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Lammers.
Mr. Chair, I actually think it's going to be a money saving bill on behalf of the Department of Agriculture. You don't need to pay to administrate it. We're still having to administrate it on behalf of revocable trusts, having somebody review the reports, having things being put out there for them. Most of the people that it affects don't even know they need to file the report. So this isn't even something that that the department is generating income on because they're not filing the report. So it's not an income generator at all. If anything, I think the department is actually losing money because of the resources they're having to put in to administrate something that has no benefit.
Yeah, and that's the reason they put that fee into effect. And I've had people contact me and say, are you kidding? A $15 fee I have to send in every year is kind of a nuisance. So this would help.
Representative Smith. Chair? Yes, additionally, Mr. Chair, members, the department has known about this bill since December of this past year, and they have no concerns with it.
Very good. Without getting too far in the weeds, Ms. Lammers, could you give us the upper level altitude difference between irrevocable and revocable trusts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would love to do so.
Is the clock ticking?
I teach at St. Thomas Law School, and I just did this yesterday, so I feel very happy to be giving this. A revocable trust is a trust that you can change, amend, or revoke, just as it says in its definition. So if I set up a revocable trust and I don't like it, I can get rid of it. If I set up an irrevocable trust, of which we are not speaking about today, we're only speaking about revocable trusts as an exempt, irrevocable trust you cannot change. So once I set up the trust and I transfer the property into the irrevocable trust, it's very difficult to change. You can change it by going to court, but for our purposes today, understand that it is exactly what the title says, irrevocable. Most irrevocable trusts are established through death. So if I set up a trust under my revocable trust or my will for, let's say, my children, and those trusts get set up, they're irrevocable because I can't change them anymore because I'm dead. They become irrevocable, and those are also called testamentary trusts, which are similar to irrevocable trusts.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Last year there was some comment and discussion, and I'm trying to think of exactly what it was of a farm couple setting up trusts, and it had to do with losing partial homestead if one of them passes away. Could you comment on that for just a second?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This was a bill that we were discussing last year. So what a very typical situation happens with estate planning, maybe some of you even have done this yourselves, where you've set up your estate plan and one spouse owns a piece of property in their trust and another spouse owns a piece of property we call splitting the trust to maximize value for estate tax purposes, which is beyond our scope today. But a lot of times we have a couple that owns a big piece of property. They own their family farm, and that is what they have. And these farms can get to be sizable in value. Let's say we have a $2 million operating farm. These are businesses. Not only is the farm worth, the land worth money, but the operations are worth money. So what we do sometimes is we split them. So we'll put a one-half undivided interest into mom's trust and one half undivided interest into dad's trust. And these are the revocable trusts. Remember, they can change them, amend them, get rid of them, what they want to do during life. But when one spouse dies, that trust could, say, put it into a family trust or put it into a testamentary trust, which we just spoke about, which is irrevocable. So then what we end up happening is half of the farm is owned by a revocable trust and the other half of the farm is owned by an irrevocable trust. And that irrevocable trust creates a lot of snags because of the rules that say it's irrevocable, so do we lose our homestead status because it's an irrevocable trust? It's an irrevocable trust now. Can we link those two together in order to get status for homestead and for purposes of Minnesota estate tax exemptions as well? So there's, if I'm speaking to that writer, if that's bringing up some of those memories. So it's complicated, and I think Representative Quam just spoke on some of those issues too. It can be difficult to marry the rules with taxes and rules with the estate plan.
Very good.
Thank you much.
Mr. Chair, could I comment?
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in fact, it was a great question. Chair Knobloch is introducing a bill this session to deal with your exact, the specifics of your question.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify or comment on this bill? Seeing no further questions, Representative Pearson, would you care to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion to send House File 22 to the General Register.
Very good. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you.
Last bill up this morning is Representative Johnson, and I can find my papers here as well. I think we're ready. Representative Johnson, would you care to move your bill?
I would, yes. I'd like to move that House File 259 be forwarded to the House Agriculture Finance Committee.
That's correct. And we've talked about that a second, and we'll work on that, but that's the present course for the bill.
Okay, thank you. And the purpose of House File 259 is
Do you have an amendment to your bill?
I do. Okay.
Or do you want to do that now, or do you want to do it later?
Let me just briefly explain. The purpose of the bill is to eliminate the matching or the cost share requirement for schools that receive a tractor rollover protection grant from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I would like to move the A1 amendment, which would embrace schools who have already applied for this funding.
Okay. What if there's no money available to pay them back? The money in the fund as of now is pretty well spoken for. So how do we address that?
Well, my thinking was, I understand there's one school that has applied. And I understand that that application is not complete at this time. And so if the money ran out, my guess is they would not be qualified. But if for some reason the money does not run out, they would have to choose to complete it. My thought was on the amendment was just to embrace the school that isn't in the application process.
Well, I thought you were talking about the school that had already received and had their roll bar installed.
No, they haven't received. As I understand, no money has been. It's in process, and the status of the application is not completely sure at this point in time. So it may be moot. But if they were to complete the application, if there were. You know, they should be. I think they should be captured in this rather than having to start the application process again.
No, I think that's very reasonable. And I know the Randolph chapter got their roll bar on last year, and there I think it's a 656 or a 706 is going great guns down there, Randolph. So, any questions or comments on the amendment? And its amendment, the A1 amendment in your packet. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. So the bill is in the form you'd care to have it, Representative Johnson. Let's discuss the bill as amended.
Okay, thank you, Representative Anderson. I just want to acknowledge your leadership on this, too, because last year this was a fairly major issue in ag, because farm safety is an important issue in Minnesota, and tractor accidents with tractors that don't have rollover bars is central to that, and I think a lot of progress has been made. And we've got this program. Last year during the hearings on it, we had the students from Randolph were here.
Mm-hmm.
And they explained that they do farming as part of their FFA chapter. And I think the committee immediately realized, hey, you guys, you know, it's important that you have a rollover bar, that maybe even priority for schools to have that because we want to protect our kids. And so, if you'll recall, there was some effort to see, well, could we raise the money right here to do that? And, of course, that was inappropriate. But it kind of brought to my attention that this should be a priority in the rollover bar protection program. And so the purpose of this bill is to make it so schools do not have to pay the up to 30% of the cost or up to $500 for installing the rollover bar. And I think that's merited in part because in my 4 years here, one of the things I've learned is that agriculture education is consistently facing challenges with funding. And I'll just mention one area where it kind of bothers me is that we ask a lot of ag educators to work for free in the summer. And I think that's a real stretch, and that's a separate issue, but it points to, it illustrates the challenges that these programs have. So just as last year I think a story was the best way to tell for the need of the program, I've invited Mr. Tim Uhlenkamp, who's an ag education teacher at Sibley East, and he and his students will tell their story, and hopefully it will convince this committee that it's a good idea.
Good morning, sir. Identify yourself, and let's have your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Uhlenkamp. I'm a high school ag teacher at Sibley East High School. We service Arlington, Gaylord, and Green Isle in Sibley County. I'm also the vice president of the Minnesota Association of Agriculture Educators. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and Representative Johnson to invite us. 8 years ago, we started a program. We run a two-acre school garden. In our county, the number one agricultural production is in crop production. The co-ops and businesses around were coming to us saying, we need students. How can you help us fill employment? And we thought, what better than a hands-on way than to produce a crop? All of you may understand and know that renting land for a school district and growing corn and soybeans is not exactly something that we could always get into, but we could grow vegetables. We set a partnership with, there's a large dairy right on Highway 5 between Arlington and Gaylord, and he had 2 acres of land that he offered to us to use. We started with a 1940s, 50s model H Farmall, and a lot of donated equipment, one-bottom plows to do this type of stuff, and the other ag teacher and myself looked at each other and said, we need to transition to a more commercial, real-life logistics. And so we started buying equipment. We are now a commercial grown garden. All of the equipment that we purchased was either through grants or donations. And I'm not going to talk about school financing, but the fact of the matter, to start a program of this size and nature is not something that a school is always willing to give money to. As this time has gone on, all of a sudden we started thinking, as an agriculture educator, maybe my job is not only to show students how to produce food, but the safety aspect of it. We do have PTO equipment. We do have hills. Not a lot in Sibley County, but it happens to have one right in our garden. And so when this bill came up last year, there was talk about, you know what, maybe we need rollover bars. And you start thinking about the students that I have with me and the safety of them. I grew up on a farm. You do what you got to do. But when I start thinking about my students, I don't let them do everything because of the safety factor. So I think for the safety, that's one of our main goals now, is to teach the safety factor of agricultural production. In rural Minnesota and rural America, farm safety has become a higher priority than it has been in the last 20, even 50 years. So that's how it would affect us, because if I walk into my school district and say, and I'm just throwing a number out, I haven't researched the cost of this. If I walk into my school district and say I need $1,000 to $3,000 to update my equipment, they're going to look at me and say, too bad. And then all of a sudden the whole program is affected. I can't do what I do as an educator without the opportunity to use our equipment. So, thank you.
Very good. Very good story. Questions from members? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do you get, is there a National Farm Safety Bureau or standards? Where would I go look for that? Is there a website on that? Or I've looked at OSHA, and they've got some pieces, but.
Mr. Uhlenkamp?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Thank you,
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, for that question, because actually that gets to some of the work we did last year. We passed legislation last year expecting the Department of Agriculture to begin to inventory and explain some basics of farm safety and to establish a website. And they willingly did that out of Hyde, which I thought was a bit of a stretch, but they did it. And they successfully produced a website that's now online. And what I see that as a start for what is a more major farm safety initiative in the state of Minnesota. And I hope that that becomes an initiative of this session of the legislature, because it's important. This gets back to the budget cuts over the last 20 years in Minnesota. When Farm Extension, University of Minnesota Extension had an extensive farm safety program in Minnesota, funding was cut as part of those the budget cuts that Minnesota experienced. And consequently, Minnesota has fallen behind other states in terms of the farm safety record. And there's data associated with this. The Minneapolis Star Tribune last year had a series of articles that very ably illustrated that. Ironically, the person who used to run our farm safety program moved to Wisconsin, where they still have a farm safety program statewide, and their data is far stronger than ours. There's states like the state of Washington that has a strong farm safety program. And so this is a small part of that, and this is it gets even smaller when we're talking about rollover bars in the school. But I think it's important that this committee and the legislature really recognize the overall importance of safety on the farm. And I think especially in these times where I live, far more than when I was a kid. When I was a kid, pretty much the farm was the family. Just the family operated the farm and maybe the father's son. They were smaller. Now we see larger farms, and a lot of that's families combined. So it's still the family farm is the base of the farm economy, certainly where I live. But increasingly, we're hiring other people to work on our farms. And increasingly, we're dependent on people for whom English is not their first language to work on our farms. And this gets into a lot of, so safety on the farm, as Mr. Uhlenkamp has recognized, is critical. And I think it's more challenging now. And so I would, again, there's a larger context to this, and therefore this is a small step towards it, but I hope we can do more in this session of the legislature.
Follow-up, Representative?
No.
Any other questions? Mr. Uhlenkamp, you mentioned that you at one time had an H tractor kind of near and dear to my heart. Do you still have that, or what tractors and how many do you have now that could use roll bars?
Well, I have two B farm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two B farm hauls for sale, one with a belly mower and one with some tillage equipment on it. We're a holistic program. We would bring down and out tractors out of the woods and restore them, use them until we could sell them. That was part of where the funding came from, because you can buy one of those tractors for $300 or $400, restore it and sell it for $1,000. And all of a sudden, you put that some of that money into an account. Right now, we run a 4000 International, which is actually a construction. It's a 70s model. It's yellow, not red. It's construction model, which is lower to the ground. One of the reasons we purchased it before I even thought about a rollover issues. We were thinking about, okay, what would be safe for students to use and whatnot. So we have that. We also have a 20-horse lawn tractor that I was thinking. You know, that could be, you know, you think about your riding lawnmower. How many mow lawn on hills and your leg is outstretched to kind of catch yourself if that tractor lawnmower starts to roll down the hill. So we have some equipment that this would be a major issue. And my job is education. If I can't let my students use this equipment, how am I educating them? Because that's what we do. So they just watch Mr. Uhlenkamp do it, or they get to use the equipment too. So.
Thank you. I have a couple students to testify. Welcome.
Yeah. I do.
Okay.
And I don't know. They're a little nervous, so don't rip on them too much.
This is the Ag Committee, so don't worry about that. Good morning. Give us your names and your grade in school and a little bit about yourself, and then talk about the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Scott Holmquist. I'm a senior at Sibley's High School. And this past summer, I worked at the garden, and I was able to learn quite a bit from Mr. Uhlenkamp, growing and harvesting various crops, getting to use the machinery, and just mainly learn a lot. Okay. Next.
Hi, Mr. Chair. I'm Allison Ives. I'm from the Sibley SFA Chapter 2, and I work at the garden, too, also. And it would be nice having a rollover cage because then, we can use the tractors, too, and, we get, learning experience, how to do that stuff and the responsibility that all goes into it.
Okay.
And my name is Liz Thies. I was a 2015 graduate of Sibley East, and I worked 2.5 summers in the garden, so I've had a couple years of experience. And one of my memories is we never were allowed to use a tractor. We always had to wait on one of the teachers. And you talked about how some of the teachers aren't getting paid for the summer. So some days we didn't have him out there with us, so we had to find other things to do. And so with the rollover protection and his guidance, I think that would be a really good opportunity for the students to learn more about the tractors, because we were pretty much pulling weeds while he was doing the fun stuff like planting, rolling tarp over.
Yeah, good question. So if you get a roll bar, you get the fun stuff and the teacher gets to pull weeds? Oh, very good. How many, you said is your garden's a couple of acres, and what all do you grow, and how many kids show up to help in the summertime?
I'd say on average we
can say your names.
Oh, Scott Holmquist. Okay. I'd say on average we have at least 3 workers. I mean, some days may vary where more people are able to come and show up, so we can have 6 and we can accomplish more. But yeah, and I feel like with having another person with the roll-off bar, having that one person able to be on the tractor, more will be accomplished and more crops can be grown.
Okay.
And then Allison Ives, and we grow almost every vegetable we have out there. We had spinach, watermelon, corn, beans, peas, beets, squash, literally almost every vegetable.
So what do you do with the produce that you grow?
Allison Ives. We have CSA shares where the community, I think we had 28 this year, the community every Wednesday, they come and get them. And then we also bring some to our local food shelf if we have extras. And we bring some to the school kitchen so that during the school year we'll have fresh vegetables.
Very good. So, Liz, are you in school someplace now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm currently a sophomore at Morningside College in Sioux City, Iowa.
And came back for this? Thank you.
Yes. Through the snowstorm.
Yeah. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question just for the students. Do you currently live on a farm, or did you grow up on a farm, or is this a different experience for you?
Allison Ives, and I live on a family farm. It's a 4-generation farm, and we have crops and beef cows. So, yeah.
Scott Holmquist, and I do not live on a farm. I live in town, but working with my dad on the farm that he works on, I get to experience more opportunities, and then through 4-H and FFA.
And Liz Thies, and I grew up in the country, but we were not livestock, no crops, so this was kind of a new experience. Like, obviously, I help Grandma and her little patch sometimes, but other than that, it was pretty much just a new experience to garden every day.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think, again, this is an illustration about how agriculture can reach out to students who don't have the farming experience to be able to open their eyes to the possibility for agriculture as a future endeavor. Thank you.
And a couple of you have the blue jackets on. Is the Summertime Garden an FFA project, or all ag students, or who gets to take part in that?
Scott Holmquist, but during the school year, in the spring and the fall, we get to, many times you get to go out for class and work on the garden and finish up what we didn't all get done in the summer. But yeah, I mean, it's really just a school project. Everyone gets involved in it and gets to enjoy it.
Okay, very good. Thank you for coming in, students. Any other questions? Representative Kunish Podine.
Very well. Thank you. Actually, this is not for the students, but I really appreciate you being here and sharing your stories. For Representative Johnson or Mr. Uhlenkamp, where is the liability? Who holds the liability for any injuries? And if how much would that affect the cost of the insurance or the liability if you had these protective devices on all of your equipment?
Representative?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Uhlenkamp on that.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Uhlenkamp, go ahead.
We talk about liability a lot in school districts. These students traveling with me today is a liability. Driving through a snowstorm is a liability. And I'm going to say this from a personal standpoint. If I worried about liability all the time, we probably wouldn't do anything. Under my understanding, the school district, as long as they are with me and with a doing an activity that is school-based and orientated, the school takes on the liability. I don't have a financial impact. I would say that us producing a roll bar would probably drop our liability very little because of the – I would bet that the school pays a significant amount of liability insurance the way it is. So,
follow-up question, Representative?
No, thank you very much.
Anybody in the audience who would care to comment on the bill? If not, just an update. I got these figures from Whitney at the Department of Ag a couple of days ago, an update on that rollover protection program. The appropriation we gave them last year was $250,000, and then we also, the bill that Representative Daniels had, we got about $42,500 in private donations from some of the bigger ag companies in the state. And the numbers as of the end of the year, 85 rollovers have been installed so far on tractors, and the cost of that was about $92,000, so an average cost that the state program paid was about $1,070 per rollover bar. And really pleased to see that in the bill, I think the department was allowed 20% of the funds for administration. They only spent about $7,000 on administration, so thanks to the department for doing a very good job and using the money wisely. And, of course, they're pairing with the call center in New York State, which helps keep the cost down, but just a very, very good job by the Department of Ag in administering the program and doing it on the lean side. And the exact figure was about $7,531 they spent on program administration. In the queue now, there's 141 additional applications that have been approved and are just awaiting the installation and receipt so that they can get paid. So the money is pretty well gone right now. That's why I mentioned early on that they aren't taking any applications additionally yet because the money is pretty well used up. I'm going to have a bill for some additional funding. Hopefully we can get that as well. And also some of the companies... at the chamber dinner, I sat at the Land O'Lakes table, and they were one of the companies that donated last year, and they were very interested. And I think some of those companies may be willing to donate again this year, so thanks to them as well for their interest. And the program, I think, went over very well, and the interest was a little bit more than I thought even. So a lot of interest out there and demand to get these rollover bars. Question from Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for carrying this. I think it's a great bill. And this, Mr. Chair, this question may be for you or it may be for Representative Johnson, whoever wants to take it. But I know you said most of the money is spent. What happens to maybe the little bit that is left? Will that carry over? Does it get absorbed somewhere? How does that work?
I can tackle that. Again, this is from the Department of Ag. It's estimated that the entire state allocation will be spent, as well as about $5,000 in that donation money. So there may be some of that donation money left, but I would anticipate that if there's, as long as there's any money in the fund, they would continue to grant a rollover approval until the money is used up, would be my estimation. But if Ms. Pace would care to comment on that. Okay. Yeah, so the money will be used until it's used up. Representative Poston?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for carrying this bill. You mentioned a safety website earlier. Can you tell us what that website is?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, and Representative Poston, no, I don't remember where it's at. You go to the MDA site, you could likely find it. But I did look at it, and again, I just want to thank the Department of Agriculture for really doing a nice job. It's a good site. It's an excellent start to where we're trying to go with Farm Safety in Minnesota.
Good question. Just heard from the committee administrator that he can send that link out to all of us on the committee. So if you want to see what that looks like, why, it'll be sent out on your email. So take a look on that. Just out of a question, Mr. Uhlenkamp, since you are the vice president of the state organization, you'll have this answer right at the tip of your hand. How many FFA programs have gardens and would have tractors that could utilize this program in the summertime?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's becoming more and more popular having a garden in the summer. It gives reasoning for our summer program, a lot of that. I would say 15 to 20 have large-scale gardens. There's probably another 15 to 20 that have a much smaller community-type garden that is more of a neighborhood garden in town. But when we're looking at size and scale of what we have, I would say that 10 to 15 to 20 range.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? If not, any final comments, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to pick up on one comment that Mr. Uhlenkamp made about the demand for younger people to work in agriculture in rural Minnesota. And it called for me a conversation I had with a dairy farmer in Niklet County who explained that he's paying a pretty good wage to a high school girl to come out and milk cows every day. And when I asked what the wage was, and I'm not going to quote it because I just don't want to do that, but I did recognize it as significantly higher than probably any kid in North Mankato or Mankato can expect to make in the general market. And it draws a larger question it illustrates some opportunities that are available in agriculture. In rural Minnesota, actually where I'm seeing it, in many ways I'm thinking that wages are probably a little better in agriculture than they are in town. And they aren't even I live in an urban area, especially for young people. And the fact that Mr. Uhlenkamp talked about how this kind of practical experience in the garden or in an ag education farm is so important to provide, develop those skills and that understanding of safety. I think how valuable that is to the producer who then hires his students. Those kids already have thought through the value of safety and know how to operate equipment and that sort of thing. That's an important training program that benefits agriculture, but certainly benefits the kids who can move into employment in an important industry. So other than that, I ask for your support for this. I think it makes good sense, and it helps lets us take care of our kids and make sure they're safe as they're learning how to farm. Thank you.
With that, Representative Johnson renews his motion that House File 259 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ag Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you much, committee members. Hang on just a second. We have additional sets of minutes to approve. More earth-shaking business here. Representative Poppy, would you care to approve the minutes of the January 12th meeting?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Let's see who's lucky. Representative Lewick, the minutes from the January 17th meeting, would you care to approve those?
So moved.
All in favor of the minutes for January 17th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. And one more, the minutes from the meeting of January 18th. Representative Miller, do you care to approve those minutes?
Aye. Yes, we approve those minutes.
Very good. Thank you. And all in favor of the January 18th minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Approve, same sign. Motion passed. Is that it?
One more.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is the joint hearing in the Capitol with the Environment Committee last Thursday. That was a long meeting, but got some good testimony and heard some things. So
moved, Your Honor.
Okay, very good. Representative Poppy again moves to approve the minutes of the January 19th meeting at the Capitol. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. Thank you, members, for that housekeeping chore. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.